This is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell.
Thank you for joining us here on a Wednesday here on GLS. We are starting a little bit later than normal. It is 10:01. It is one past the hour. Thank you for joining us here on GLS. It is a pleasure to be here, actually. It's so good to be back in the driver's seat. We have taken a few weeks off because we just needed to sort a few things out, and we changed the format of the show again. But thank you for joining us, whether you're joining us on Facebook, whether you're joining us live on YouTube, Google Plus, chefwondermedia.net/live, whether you're joining us there, or whether you're joining us wherever you're on the podcast. I know there's a few people that joined us on the podcast. If you want to submit a question live on air, you can use the Q&A feature on any of those platforms. Thank you for joining us. We have got a slightly new formatted show we're trialing out this week. I think it's going to be, this is how it's going to be from now on. I like this format. The show is going to be 2 hours long, so when we are going to split it up in the podcast version per hour. So don't worry, the people who are listening live are going to get the full shebang. But if you're listening to the podcast, you are going to get a shortened version. Also, we're ditching the number system. We're kind of not doing, we're not numbering the broadcasts anymore. We don't see a fit for it. I mean, it's nice, but we don't see a fit for them. And, you know, it's just going to be, me shooting the shit for 2 hours on a Wednesday night, because your feedback has mostly said when we did the reshuffle to have the hour-long break that the hour shows that you guys wanted me to shoot the breeze just for this period of time. So we're going to be doing more of that because that's what you want, and we want to do what the people want. This allows us to open up the broadcast to a lot more things, and with potentially in the future guests as well. Now, onto the sad business, a little bit of behind the scenes up here in this. And we do got a full 2-hour broadcast planned for you today. We're not going to be talking all business, but we have a little bit of sad news. Terrible Tuesday Movie Night will be coming back. It'll be coming back soon. We've just had some technical difficulties with files and scheduling and what have you, but it will be coming back. Don't you worry about a thing. Alrighty, we are moving right along. We have delayed enough. Let's get to the real business at hand. Starting with our first story, we'll start off another broadcasting week with another NBN. We start off another NBN fluff story. I like to call these fluff stories because the NBA & Co. will spend $14 million on new copper. So, that's fun. The company building the national broadband network, the NBA, has bought 1,800 kilometers of copper at a cost of $14 million to facilitate fiber to node component of the network, and it's going to need a whole lot more of it, NBN Chief Executive Bill Marrow told the Senate estimates hearing in Canberra on Tuesday that the Sydney-based Parisian, the company supplying the new copper, will have to ramp up production as the NBN Co. develops new copper to connect the NBN nodes to Telstra's distribution pillars. The new copper to forge this is Link. Not surprising, and Mr. Narrow said that so far NBN Co. has not had to replace the copper between the nodes and the premises. He added that the condition of Telstra's existing copper is relatively robust, but acknowledged it is too early to make any conclusive assessment. FTNN technology was launched last month with 5,100 premises currently ready to receive a service. Mr. Narrow said that there was currently 58 paying FTTN customers. As of October 8th, there are 619,861
Ba-ba.
households ready to receive the service across the entire NBN. It's still early days for the MTNN with 1,400 nodes in action. NBN Co is yet to install multiple nodes for a successful rollout. You know, the NBN. Sorry, Mr. Narrow. Where's it go? Quote. I'm going to pause that autoplay. Quote. Mr. There is a quote in here. Mr. Conroy, who was the former Labor Communications Minister, the roadmap highlighting estimated ready for service dates for different suburbs presented to the RSPs pointed to significant days between when the network would be rolled out in an area and when it would be made available to the end users. Mr. Narrow said the confidential document was designed to streamline the build process. Quote, "People died last time when you were in charge of something," he shouted at the CEO after a discussion about the rollout in the New South Wales Central Coast. Mr. Narrow previously oversaw an American company which had to later had its two pipelines explode, killing nine people. It's the NBN. It's got problems. I mean, I'm not going to deny. I'm not going to sit here and deny those problems. I mean, it's tough every single time that, you know. It's tough when people sit here and go, oh, this. And I see both arguments. I see the argument that the NBN is perfect. It's going to deliver a flawless internet to all of its people, and it's going to be delivering, you know, internet to all, regardless of, you know, who, where you live and who has it. But that at the end of the day is the ultimate goal. I mean, it's kind of hard that, you know, it's kind of hard to see that perspective, particularly when, you know, it's look, the NBN is way off. We aren't going to get an NBN for a good while, trust me. It's not something that we're going to get in our immediate future. Trust me, it's definitely not something that is going to be coming within, you know. I don't think the NBN is going to be coming within 5 years. I don't think that the full rollout of the NBN is going to happen within 5 years. And here's
Is
why.
why.
One person says one thing, and then the other people say another thing. It is just way too much to keep track of. It really is. There's people on one side of the fence saying the other thing. There's people on the other fence saying another thing. And you got to think of it like this. And you've got this NBN network that is highly politicized too. The NBN is a political has turned in from an has turned from, you know, being this simple project to being this huge political balancing point on people's agendas. And you've got to think of it like this, and maybe my coffee hasn't quite kicked in yet. You've got to think of it like this as well. You've got to think that some people like the NBN and some people really, really think that the NBN is the worst thing ever. I don't see that argument of people that think that the NBN is going to be the worst thing ever, but I think that I'm also on the other perspective that the NBN it certainly has its flaws as well. And this the NBN is raking up a huge budget. That's no denying that. The budget of the NBN is huge as well. You've got to think of it like this. It's raking up millions and billions of dollars every single time that something goes terribly astray with it as well. So it's just, I don't know. It's something that really, really should be addressed, and people just need to go, well, it's just something. Should people reevaluate? Should we reevaluate how we're going about, designing the infrastructure for all this if we are, if we are kind of going, here's an extra 1800 kilometers. Now, for those people, okay, let's do a quick, well, other way around, but you get the general idea. So let's go kilometers to miles. 1800 kilometers is 1108 and some loose change miles, right? Now, I don't know distances between US regions because that's just not my thing. That's just not my area. But what I don't understand, like, from 1800 kilometers away, where will 1800 kilometers away get you here? It'll get you to here to the New South Wales border. It'll get you awfully close. So covering one of the most largest states, only covering from, one border to the other, the top of the other state, it doesn't really line up. It doesn't really line up. And it's just, is the infrastructure for the NBN, is it actually something that
That
is
is
viable
viable
at
at
this
this
point?
point.
I mean, I am a supporter of the NBN. Look, I'm a supporter of the NBN. I do online content. It is my thing. I do want fast, speedy internet, but if it's going to bring a whole lot of political rhetoric with it, it's just probably not worth it at this current point. It's at this current point in stage. Anyway, moving on from that. By the way, on October 1st, the NBN launched its first two satellites, with rural and regional areas to benefit in the first half of next year as well. Anyway, continue. Continue on as well on the back end of the Star Wars trilogy trailer being released for Star Wars 7 this past week. Did you know that? Did you know that Princess Leia is one of the cinema's greatest heroines to return to rekindle a love affair? Did you know that? Gasp. It just began with a sentence. Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope. Yes. While the vaudeville cliche, a princess tied figuratively to a Death Star rail tracks, while a black-cloaked Sith Lord glowed mechanically above her, and John Williams trickled on the piano in the background, sprang a love story for ages. Aww. On the other hand, there's a generation of fanboys and some fangirls who quite never understand. While pasty hair curls were so sexy in outer space. That love affair came full circle this week as the official trailer for the seventh Star Wars Force films, The Force Awakens, made its formal debut on to a television and web audience almost too big to it broke all records. It contained many things that set the internet into override, among them being a gleaming chrome stormtrooper named Phaser, a sinister black-cloth Vader wannabe called Kylo Ren. There are new characters for ages-old space saga. But nothing was more touching, more personal than a glimpse that we had at the tear-stained Princess Leia, gently resting her hand on the chest of Han Solo, the quote, I don't want to read that sentence, who won her heart in 1983's Return of the Jedi. 3 decades later, the young princess who led a rebellion against the Operation is transformed. She is older, to be sure, but is a very different woman physically. I'm just trying to figure out if there's any point to this thing, this article at all. No, but it is pretty cool that the Star Wars trailer got released as well.
Well,
That is
that is
pretty cool for sure. As we continue here on DLS, well, we do have some fascinating news for you. Speaking of nerd stuff, did you know that today it was Back to the Future Day? It or is Back to the Future Day? Did you know that? Well, no. We'll fill you in on. We'll fill you in on all the details as we continue. As we continue, it's 10:09. It's 10:18.
When the Gryffindors creak and the tombstones quake, spooks come.
Whatever the time of day, whatever the time of the night, we're here to serve you a big dose of genericness with your host, Dale Campbell.
This is GLS. Thank you for joining us here on a
Wednesday.
Thank you for being with us, whether you're listening to us on YouTube, Google Plus, Facebook, or at chefwondermedia.net/live. Thank you for being with us, however you're listening to the show. Now, today, did you know, and by the way, random little Halloween song for October. Hey, it's October 21st. You know, Halloween's coming up in 10 days. You've got to get into the festive spirit. I don't know. Anyway. Did you know today is Back to the Future Day? Now, to the telegraph.co.uk, the travel section, for whatever reason, has this section. I've got to take a drink of coffee during the break. That's kind of bad. Has a look through the predictions that the Back to the second part of the Back to the Future movie made. The film made numerous predictions that have been pretty much spot on, from the use of drones to fingerprint scanning to computer tablets, hands-free gaming, wearable technology, and video calls. Even a hoverboard is almost reality. It's not quite reality. One of the film's biggest predictions, however, totally missed the mark, namely flying DeLorean cars. When it comes to other predictions of how travel might work in the future, flying personal transportation has been something of a consistent. People imagined we'd or be whizzing around the heavens by now. As the series of paintings in the link show, which it's kind of really strange that I'm telling you about pictures that are being painted on a radio show. It doesn't really work. It doesn't really work that way. Here's how shows that some, this is how science fiction would have worked back in the 80s as well. And these photos are pretty cool as well. They show all sorts of transportation as well. They show everything from let's have a look. They show everything from, you know, trains that have wings, which is an interesting concept. Everything that everything from planes as well. People having wings to fly. I guess that's what that is. Oh, aerial fireman. Ah, it actually says what it says. So I don't have to do that. The rural postman, which has some sort of weird plane thing that looks like he's riding a spoon. I'm assuming that's what that is. And aviation police, which, yeah, I don't know. I don't know about the aviation police having no armor on them whatsoever. But anyway, we'll digress. Even depictions of from these paintings show underwater travel. By the way, those just joining us, this is Back to the Future was not the only thing to predict the future. We have some 1920s from. Some 19th century paintings that also show some crazy predictions for travel. A whale bus. There you go. A croquet party happening underwater. That's okay. A race in the Pacific. I'm assuming those are eels. I'm assuming. Can't be too sure, though. I don't know. Some German postcards show hot air balloons and show what seems to be described as an afternoon stroll across the lake. I think they're hail brands? Is that what they're called? They're like basically those petty weathers, but they're riding them on a lake. Strange. Sea trains is another thing that people have found as well. And of course, traditional personal flying machines as well. People having gliders and stuff as well. Let's have a look. What is this one? Submarine boats. I love the girls. Submarine boats. Submarine boats is always a plus as well. Let's have a look. The airships as well, which was brought to you by the German film. There you go, by Germany. Further predictions of the time include courtesy of J. Elif Wackens, a civil engineer, was published in the Ladies' Home Journal. He envisioned, among other things, electric ships that could cross the Atlantic in 2 days and trains that could travel up to 150 miles per hour. Cruise ships today could take a week to make a journey from Britain to New York, but Japan's suck-in bullet trains reach 200 miles per hour I'm not saying that live on air. The train... One of the trains in Japan can reach 270 miles per hour. There's also the good old aerial sands as well. Aeroplanes. And then, of course, the Jetsons. And the Tripomatic 1600. Happy Back to the Future Day, everyone. So here's some crazy Back to the Future This is great. So these crazy, crazy predictions of air travel. These are great. As we continue here on GLS, GLS. As we continue here on GLS, we're going. Well, internet providers, they're not the best of people. And also, it wouldn't be a GLS if we didn't have a data retention copyright story. It wouldn't be right. As we continue here on GLS, it's 10:30.
Just search the generic live show and react. This is the generic live show with Dale Kim.
This is your generic live show. I forgot that I was live on air for 1 second. There you go. This is how good this new format is going. Yes. Thank you for joining us here on a Wednesday. By the way, it is Wednesday, the 21st of October. On this day, remember, it is Back to the Future Day as well. So thank you very much for taking the time out of your busy schedule and joining us on such a significant day as well. Do you know what else today is? Today is... And we will get to the data retention story of the century. Don't you worry about a thing. You won't miss a thing if you're tuned into the GLS. By the way, today was our treasurer, now former treasurer of Australia's, Joe Hockey's final day. It was his final day on the job. Oh, Mr. Hockey, who served 19 years as member of North Sydney, former Treasurer Joe Hockey said about the Australian government, good at policy, bad with politics. Joe Hockey is expected to be appointed ambassador to the United States, said GST should be increased, tax cut, and Australians who could afford to do so should pay more for their education and health care. Yay. I'm kidding, by the way. So, it was his final day today, after serving 19 years. Joe Hockey, okay, so we do trend a fine line when it comes to politics as well. It is a fine line when you do decide to talk about politics, because people believe different things as well. Like, you kind of have to tread very, very lightly when it comes, you know, when it comes to politics and people's opinions, and it is, this show is a very, very opinionated show. I do express opinions. Some of them are controversial. We don't shy away from controversial opinions. It's interesting when Draghi, love him or hate him, he has done a lot. He retired as well because he kind of, you know, got shoved out because of the, you know, out of the cabinet when Malcolm Turnbull had the cabinet reshuffle. So Joe Hockey was moved. So, you know, he was moved. So he's kind of forced into it. But 19 years is a good run. Joe Hockey, in his farewell speech today, he called for stability in his farewell speech. We have that clip for you. Again, you won't miss a thing if you tune into GLS. Here is Joe Hockey in his farewell speech today to the Parliament.
By thanking the people of my electorate of North Sydney for giving me the honour, the opportunity and the privilege of representing them in this great chamber. Yeah. We have walked a successful journey together, and I appreciate the enormous effort many locals made in helping me along the way. Of course, one of the things that sustains us all in this place is the friendships we make, and I have mostly met very honourable people in this place. To all of my colleagues, thank you for making me laugh and on a couple of occasions making me cry. You've stirred me to great anger, but equally we've all shared many laughs. Above all else, you've made me very proud to be an Australian. In particular, to my long-term Canberra flatmates, Jamie Briggs, Brennan Nelson, who's here, and Bob Baldwin. They've seen more of me than many would care to see.
That's not pretty, Joe.
And I can now confess that our happiest moments were sitting at home, late at night, eating paddle pops, watching Jerry Springer, and admiring the latest Nickelback album, in my case alone. Ladies and gentlemen, if everyday Australians are to be their best, then we, as community leaders, must be even better. That's why the revolving door in Australian politics must be jammed shut. If we don't show enough respect to each other, then how can we hope that the electorate will respect us? The stability of the Howard government has been replaced with rapid and unpredictable changes of government on both sides. That turnover has dramatically weakened the policy hand of whoever occupies the government benches in this chamber. Most public servants are very good, but some, confused by the inconsistency of policy and the rapid change in the number of ministers, they will simply wait out a minister or a government when they are asked to implement very difficult decisions. And in this parliament, the Senate has the capacity to turn every policy proposal into a bit of a mess, thus undermining public confidence in the process of government. Ultimately, this chamber can end up being responsible for its own undoing. We cannot make it normal to have four prime ministers and four treasurers in just 4 years. Leadership instability and ministerial turnover is the enemy of good public policy.
Now, love it or hate it, he has a point. It comes from both sides. It comes from the left. It comes from the right. You know, we do have to get stability back into this country politically. And we, you know, have to ride up, you know, to the next election to probably get to that point. But realistically, have it now, have it later. It's something that really needs to be done as well. It's, you know, it's just something that needs to happen. You know, it's something that, you know, shouldn't have to be kind of said. The fact that we need stability in our government for, you know, to run a country. It's that's something that shouldn't have to be said out loud by someone who is actually retiring as a politician. That is something that should be a given and not actually something that, yeah, should be said out loud by a politician. I just repeat to myself. That's like the third time that I've done that on the show tonight. I do apologize. But something fascinating as well. It's interesting to me that it's taken, again, it takes an outgoing politician to say this about the House of Representatives in this country. We need stability. And whether it does come from, depends on the leader. Like, I support particular people, but I believe that I have my particular views. My neighbours probably have other particular views as well. But whether who you believe in, I'm pretty sure if I took a snap poll of anyone, they would believe that we need stability in our government. There's no undermine about that. Anyway, we have a copyright story. Oh, golf clap for no. Oh, no. Yep. Well, we're clapping. Oh, yes. And by the way, this is a story that was published at 9:18 p.m. It is now 10:43, so we grabbed this before the show. A little bit of a round of applause for the Attorney General Department. No? Okay. The federal government has proceeded less than a third of data retention plans submitted by the internet service providers, while hundreds more aren't even put have not even been put forward proposals, placing them in technical breach of the country metadata laws. Yes, I'm getting excited about this. The Attorney General's Department has confirmed that 229 plans submitted by the ISPs to show that they comply with the laws which require them to collect data and store metadata, but only 79 have been processed. 100 more internet service providers have not submitted their plans as they have struggled to understand what is required despite retention laws coming into effect on October 13th. More than 400 ISPs are operating in Australia, which includes the large telcos like Telstra, and many small operations have been given 6 months to ready themselves. Yeah, interesting. Internet Australia's chief Larry Patton says the process was flawed from the start and has called Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull to fast-track a review of the legislation. Quote, successive attorney generals from both sides rejected the pressure of law enforcement agencies to bring in data retention legislation, he told the AAP on Wednesday. Adding the Attorney General George Brandis and his department, quote, we are just following them. We are now following the then Prime Minister Tony Abbott's instructions. I don't know why I just said that like Jersey Shore, but we're going to ignore that. The laws include a mandatory review of data retention scheme within 3 years, but Mr. Patton said that many ISPs can't wait that long. It must be fixed now, end quote, he said. Mr. Patton has also said that the 131 set aside to support ISPs through the implementation process has fell short as well. Yay! So, okay. There is... Okay, so data retention in this country has been a hot button issue on this show. And if you've ever listened, I've said it on the broadcast 1,000 times probably at this point, but I've said it on the broadcast before. I've said implementing, just going, okay, I haven't used this analogy on the show before, so this is going to be interesting. So if you say, it's like raising a child. It's like saying to a child, okay, we are going to move you from... Let's say to a whole, like, sorry, let me rephrase my analogy live on air, because that's what I like to do. I like to do that often. Say, for example, you have a neighborhood of children, right? And you say to them, well, okay, all of you, regardless of your age, whether you are 3 to, say, just born, say, for example, newborns is the technical name for that. Say, for example, if... You say to all of them and all the parents as well of these children, say, no, you can't have breast milk. You're now on formula. Don't worry. We'll provide funding for the formula and, you know, you all have to do it because, well, I say so. But that's the problem. You can't implement a blanket plan like that because it won't work. And I've said that on the program before. I've said, and... Could you imagine that some of the parents outrage and go, well, no, I believe that my child should be on breast milk for, you know, 2 years before going to formula. Or whatever you think might work, regardless of whoever's doing this, the dictator of the community, say, for example, is giving out breast milk to all of the babies in the community. Whether that's happening or whether that's not happening, I don't know. But it doesn't work. Why doesn't it work? Because you can't do that. You can't say to people, you are doing this, you are doing this, this day, boom, bah, 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 bah. And I understand that retention, I understand that retention laws are kind of strict, and they are kind of tied down in legal implementations. But just dumping things on people is just, it's not fair on anyone at all. And, you know, the smaller operations, and, okay, I understand, and then, okay, let's back up a little bit. Data retention as well. And this baby analogy that I have. It's going to be easier for big it's going to be harder for big families and small families on two different ways to adopt this plan. It's like, so big families are going to say that it's going to be hard to adopt this breast milk to formula program, for example, because big families have a lot of people and they have a lot of arms and they have their own sort of economic system. Whereas a small family, they are so in net and they don't have many resources. They don't have many resources to adopt this program. I can't believe that I'm sitting here at 10:49 saying that I've just compared the ISP retention laws to breast milk. But it's true. You know, it's... And there is ongoing costs as well to all of this. You gotta take that into consideration. There's maintenance. There's so much more that has to go in to all of this as well that hasn't been considered by the people at the data retention center. Yeah, it's easy to slap something on a paper that says, "All right, that looks good, go." Then actually an implementation plan as well, because they're two totally different things as well. You know, you can't kind of go, here's an implementation plan, go for it kind of thing. That's just not how life should work. As we continue here on GLS, well, you know, I have a thing. We live near the beautiful reef, and the beautiful reef has some costs associated with it. We'll break down those costs for you to remove and beautify our reef. We're going to beautify the reef. As we continue here on GLS, it's 10:51.
Finally found the most generic live show. This is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell.
Thank you for joining us here on a Wednesday here on GLS. Thank you for joining us whether you're listening to us on YouTube or whether you're listening to us on chefonomedia.net/live, Facebook, Google+. Remember, use the Q&A feature on Google+ to ask your questions, or if you want to come on the program. That is the best way to interact with us, of course. Thank you for joining us. Of course, we do bless us with your listenership. It is 10:55, and we have a story for you. Remember, this is a weird experiment, by the way. It's kind of kind of weird. It's weird being going to be on here for yet another hour. I have to fill another hour of time. Ah! Anyway, speaking of filling in time. So, Great Barrier Reef. We live on the back of the Great Barrier Reef for a reason. It is one of Australia's natural beauties. It is absolutely beautiful. And there is no denying that it is a beautiful, beautiful reef. And to preserve the beautiful reef, we have to remove toxic paint. You're probably thinking to yourself, toxic what? You want to remove what now with who? That's right, I said toxic paint. The highly toxic paint is still on the Great Barrier Reef 5 years after an oil tanker spill contained banned substance, a Great Barrier Reef Marine Park Authority spokeswoman has admitted. It will cost $50 million to remove the paint, which contains a banned substance called unpronounceable radio host name, known as TBT, from the Douglas Shoal area where the Chinese oil carrier Shanning 1 ran aground in 2010. The TBT has become enabled on coral rock on the Douglas Shoal because no cleanup has begun. The paint was commonly used as bottom paint on ships until it was discovered to leach copper into the water. Quote, the anti-flooring paint at Douglas Shoal contains a highly toxic component known as TBT, which is now banned from use, said the Great Barrier GBRMPA spokeswoman said. The paint also contains copper and zinc. The chief executive, Russell Ranhelt, said on Monday it was an urgent paint that the paint be removed. Quote, I think there is an urgency to clean it up, because each storm season there is a risk that the material will be distributed more widely than at the moment due to wave action, he told Senator Louisa Watts in the Senate Estimates hearing in Canberra. Interestingly enough, it hasn't been urgent for the last 5 years. Do you know how many storms we've had in the last 5 years in the Pacific Ocean? That's not important. What is important is that, you know, why now? Is it too little too late? Is it too little too late to start cleaning up the Great Barrier Reef? Is it though? I can't be too sure. All I do know is that the Great Barrier Reef Marine Park Authority declined to outline the exact damage to Douglas Shoal before the federal court hearing. Interesting. A trial is set to in the federal court in April of 2016. 15 days have been set for the hearing. So there is... Whoop. I have no idea why that ad started playing. Apologies, audio listeners. You just had an ad trying to talk over me. How dare you? How dare you autoplay? Talk over me and my serious matter. It's a serious matter. There's oil going into the reef. As we continue here on GLS, we have another hour here on the broadcasting, and we'd like to tell you, we'd like to run through an opinion piece with you. That analyzes ad blocker, it's good for you and me, says Apple and Facebook. As we continue, it's 11 o'clock.